Hey everybody, I'm Alicia and welcome to the Medicine in Color podcast, a platform where I highlight the voices of men and women of color in all aspects of medicine and elevate their stories for the world to hear. Let's get to it. Hey, y'all, and welcome to the first episode of 2020 of the Medicine in Color podcast. I know it's March, but Happy New Year. This is my first time talking to y'all. I hope that your new year is off to a great start and that you are moving forward with purpose. I took the first couple of months of this year away from the podcast to gain some clarity on what I want to do with this platform going forward. And so the next series of episodes comes directly from that time away, and I am excited to share them. Over the last couple of months, I have also been working on managing my school study schedule and my board prep schedule. And if I'm honest, it has been rough. So for those of you who are listening who don't know what I mean when I say board prep, medical students, we take USMLE step one. And if you are an osteopathic student, you also take Comlex level one. Some students may only take Comlex just depending on what they want to do. But it's a very interesting process trying to manage schoolwork, the heavy load of school, and then also managing reviewing board material and preparing for your board exams whenever you're going to take them. Our last system was neuro, and trying to make progress daily with board prep and understand the intricacies of neuro was a real challenge, like straight up. Neuro is hard, y'all. At least it was a challenge for me. It is interesting, but it's hard. So much respect to my guest today, who is a child neurologist, like much respect to her, much respect. As time draws near for my board exams, I'm a lot more nervous than before. If y'all remember back in October, I was like all excited about board prep. I was like, yay, I'm getting ready to start. Well, I started a little earlier than that. But anyway, I'm starting board prep. I'm excited. I'm still excited to do well, but there is nothing like a UWorld block to humble you. And all my med students know there's nothing like UWorld questions to humble you. You're like, oh my God, so much red. But anywho, my last round of exams for the term was completed last week. So this past week. And now it is almost time for dedicated board study time. I am really proud of my work ethic during exam week and leading up to that, and also leading into the most important exam of the week, which is my neuro final. I kept the sticky note on my computer and at the little station where I study. It just has WIN in all caps, period, WIN. For me, that was a reminder to win against the desire to quit, win against the mental battle, win against exhaustion, win against yourself. And so every time I want to stop studying and doing Anki cards, I looked at that note and I kept pushing it. I'm really proud of that. I should also say that I hate Anki cards, okay? And really, I hate those big, like, prepared, like, massive Anki cards with thousands of cards in them. But I recognize that the repetition, the spaced repetition works. It is a necessary evil. And so I use Anki cards. But anywho, I don't enjoy that. So I've been trying to tell myself daily, like, I love these things. I love Anki. I love Anki. And so in order to trick my mind a little bit. But anywho, I'm really proud of my work ethic and my outcomes following exams. And what that showed me was I can lock in when necessary. I can lock in and I can get work done. And so my message to everyone listening is, regardless of your path, regardless of whether you are on this journey to a career in medicine or wherever you are, whatever you're doing, is to win. Win against the desire to quit. Win against the voices in your head telling that you can't do it. Win against comparing yourself to other people's process, because that'll kill you too. Win against every single day, win the fight, whatever your fight is. Last year when I was preparing for Broad Street Run, which is a really big run here in Philly, one of the security guards on our campus who's a distance runner said to me all the time, your race, your pace. So I say to you all, your race, your pace. And I also add in your lane, your game. Keep your eyes on your lane and play your game. To all my second years in the midst of board prep, your race, your pace. To my pre-meds who are still working hard to get into school, your race, your pace. To my third years who are getting ready to launch into fourth year and on clinical rotations, and you may have that one colleague who's a little bit of a gunner and is a little extra, your race, your pace. And to my fourth years who may be stressed about the match, your race, your pace. So win, y'all, this week, win this month, win in whatever challenge you are walking through, whatever season you're walking through, win. So before I jump into today's guest, I also want to share with you all what I'm reading. I like to read, that's no secret, but I just really like to learn. And so two of my new favorite books right now, one is called The Memo, What Women of Color Need to Know to Secure the Seat at the Table by Minda Hartz. And the other is Big Idea Food, A Daily Devotional for Entrepreneurs, Side Hustlers, and Dreamers by Marlena Banks. So I'm going to drop those in the show notes for you to take a look at. But yeah, check those books out. I've enjoyed them. And hope you will too. So on to today's guest. Dr. Jasmine Forte is a Christian wife, mother, and child neurologist in Atlanta, Georgia. One time for the home team, shout out to GA. She specializes in headache and concussion and is the director of headache medicine at Children's Healthcare in Atlanta. Dr. Forte earned her medical degree from the Meharry Medical College and attended residency at Emory University. In our conversation, we talk about her decision to pursue a career in pediatric neurology, how medical school and life's challenges led her to ask some serious faith questions, and how she manages to pump and drive to work in the morning. Y'all, that was a hilarious story. Sis is the ultimate multitasker. You gotta be productive on these commutes. But anyway, without further ado, here's my conversation with Dr. Jasmine Forte. Enjoy. So, Dr. Forte, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, the very first question I ask everyone is always, what do you do and why?
What do I do? So, I'm currently working at Children's Healthcare of Atlanta as the director of headache medicine in the pediatric division. And I'm also a part of the concussion program there. Okay. I've been doing that since October of 2019.
Mm-hmm. And so why do you do what you do?
That's a great question. I've known since as young as I can remember that I wanted to be in medicine. The earliest I can remember saying that I wanted to be a doctor was 5 years old. Mm. And I remember, I have an uncle who's a doctor. Mm-hmm. So I asked him one day, I said, hey, what's the type of doctor that takes care of babies? And he told me the name for that is a pediatrician. So from then on out, anytime anyone asked me, what do you want to do when you get older? What do you want to be when you grow up? I would say, I want to be a pediatrician. And I remember the look on people's faces when I would say that big word as a little child. How do you know pediatrician? That's what you want to be. But it never changed. My path never changed. I really consistently through elementary, middle, high school, college, obviously continue to want to be on that path.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So talk about your process to now. So what did you do? You knew at five, really early on, that you wanted to be a doctor, but not only that, you knew that pediatrics was where you wanted to go. So how did you get here? What was that like?
For sure. So I think I had a pretty traditional journey compared to most. I think now a lot of people tend to have a non-traditional journey. So for me, it was pretty traditional. I went through, finished high school, went into college on a pre-med track. I didn't major in the traditional biology or chemistry. Actually, it was a psychology major, but still kind of within the realm. Mm-hmm. Within psychology, I chose cognitive neurology as more of a specialty and did some research in that area. And that was maybe the first inclination I had that I was interested in the neurosciences. Mm-hmm. And so I took MCATs, obviously, applied to medical schools, and I attended Meharry Medical College. Mm-hmm. So that visit, I remember during that interview, as soon as I was done, I knew I wanted to go there. I didn't even want to interview anyone. I had done one other interview prior to that. And once I did the Meharry interview, I knew that's where I wanted to go. Mm-hmm. the environment seemed really supportive and a lot different from my undergraduate experience. So obviously Meharry is an HBCU where I went to undergraduate at the University of Richmond, was just a traditional, you know, PWI. So you can't compare really an HBCU undergrad and an HBCU graduate program, right. But I loved the aspects of the supportive nature and the alumni network and all of that in the HBCU setting. And I fell in love with the mission there. Mm-hmm. So I knew pretty early on, as soon as I got an offer there, I accepted it and I was done looking at what to go to. So I was really excited about that. Medical school is hard for everybody. Mm-hmm. It was challenging for me. That was the first time I got anything less than a C was in medical school. So that was jarring. That was shocking. So I had to relearn how to be a good student, because I think it came easy up until that point. Mm-hmm. So I went through medical school and did all the stuff you're doing now for all the board exams. It's just, you're really relearning how to study and be a student. Everybody at that point was, you know, smart. Mm-hmm. Everyone had always been done well in school. You know, we were all the nerds probably compared to our peers. And so even in that setting, we were all struggling and learning again, what does it mean to be a good student? So that was an interesting journey in and of itself.
Yeah. And then so after medical school, you went into residency. Did you go directly into a specialized residency fellowship?
I did. So child neurology, starting, I think maybe 2 or 3 years before I matched, mm-hmm. Became a combined residency fellowship type program. And so you do 2 years of pediatric training, general pediatrics. Then you do 1 year of adult neurology training, and then you do 2 years of pediatric neurology training. So it's 5 years total. Prior to that, you would do 3 years of general pediatrics and match again, almost like a separate fellowship into the neurology portion, which is more traditional for pediatric subspecialties. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Five-year track.
Got it. Okay. And so this upcoming series of episodes is centered around faith in medicine and how using faith to guide your process and what role it plays. So I want to ask you, what role does faith play in your practice in medicine?
For sure. Faith is an integral part of how I think of medicine now. Mm-hmm. I didn't grow up with a strong faith base. So for me, I really can't say I came to my own faith and really came to know God until I was actually in medical school. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, I can say I had knowledge of God. I would say we were a family that was more Christmas, Easter, you go to church. And that was pretty much it. So I was familiar, but I did not have a relationship with God for myself. Mm-hmm. Medical school happened. So as we talked about, the challenges just academically hit me, but I had also a lot of personal challenges that hit me around the same time, including my parents. They went through a divorce, and that was really jarring. Mm-hmm. And then also my mom was battling cancer around that time, too. Mm-hmm. And that was all my first 2 years of medical school. Mm-hmm. And so I think I hit my lowest point around that time. And that's when I started searching and seeking and asking a lot of questions, because I came to the end of myself, yeah. For sure. Yeah. And through that process, that's where I started asking questions. I started seeking God. I opened up my Bible, started reading it for myself, and slowly came to know who God is on my own. Mm-hmm. So I went on that journey during medical school.
Yeah. So you said during that time period, you kind of, it was like your rock bottom. You came, like, the end of your own power was, you like were essentially, you were, yeah, you came to the end of yourself. And so how do you bounce back from something like that? Like how all of the repetitive challenges, family, and then compounded with what's going on in medical school. I was talking to some folks a couple of weeks ago, and like life is still happening outside of this. Like exactly. We may be isolated in a room for 12 hours a day, but life is happening when we walk out of the room. So mm-hmm. How do you bounce back from that?
It was a gradual process. I think where I went wrong and the reason I really did hit a rock bottom was because I didn't talk to anyone about what I was going through. Not even my closest friends, not even my now husband. I think from the outside, no one would have really known how much inner turmoil I was going through, because I was still going through the motions. I was studying for tests, showing up for class, going to study groups, having a social life. All of that seemed fine on the outside, but I was not fine on the inside. And so I think, one, if I would have shared sooner with those who are close to me, opened up, been more vulnerable, I could have prevented a lot of that, just how low it got. But once I did open up a part, I had a good friend who had a really strong faith. She actually, once I did open up a little bit to her, she stayed on me. She would send me texts, call me, send me scriptures, send me sermons, and that actually helped propel me into studying on my own. So I think the first step towards getting out of there was talking to somebody and even letting them know I was in that low place.
Yeah, that's good. I was just talking to someone the other day, and like, again, the other day is relative, right? It could be like anywhere between literally yesterday and a year ago.
Right.
But this is literally 2 days ago, so it worked out. but I have gotten into the habit of saying, oh, I'm fine. Mm-hmm. And this past month or so, with all the stuff compounded with school and family outside of that, I'm like, oh no, I'm literally just going through the motions. Like, I appear to be good. I'm, you know, whatever. I'm still coming to class, still studying, still whatever. But I've learned now, or I'm still learning, that it is important to say, hey, no, I'm not good. Let me tell you what's going on in my mind or in my life. So yeah, mm-hmm. That's good. That's really good.
I think a lot of us are like that, because we just learn to just go, like, keep pressing on to the next step, and do what you have to do. Mm-hmm. And that's not natural to take a stop and say, okay, what do I really need? Other than, you can be so goal oriented and trying to get to the next step and the next step and the next step that you're not resting. You're not taking care of yourself. You're not checking in with yourself. You're not processing all the things that are going on in your life. You're just going forward. Eventually that's just not going to work. Yeah. And so that's what happened with me.
You can't operate like this. It's not, at least not long-term.
Right.
It may be survival for a little while. You may be in survival mode for a little while, but long-term you just can't operate that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so you said, so now, you said now more so than before, faith guides the way you see medicine. And mm-hmm. so you work with children every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a special population. It's a delicate population. And so how do you balance the difficulties of working with children in perhaps difficult settings, seeing them in a healthcare setting? And how does that, you know, how do you balance that?
Yeah. No, working with children is definitely challenging. It brings its own challenges, because to be around sick children, dying children, that in and of itself can open up a lot of questions in your faith. And you're also watching other people, parents who have strong faith, watch their kids suffer. And it hits you in a strong way. Mm-hmm. It hits me a lot more now that I'm a mom, even. Mm-hmm. It's harder than it was before. But I can say that it hasn't rocked my faith. I think it's strengthened my faith, because I've learned that God isn't really afraid of my questions or my doubts, and I can still bring those to him and wrestle with a lot of this stuff with him, and he's still near, and he'll still answer those questions for me. I would say on the flip side of that, in pediatrics, kids are so resilient. They do so well. So in my adult part of my training, I'll see a lot of adults who have strokes, and they don't do so well a lot of the times. I've seen plenty of kids who have strokes and they do so much better. I mean, there's a lot more hope in seeing those kids through. You know that they're going to get to a different endpoint. And so I think that kind of drives me to keep going. So there is some balance there. The vast majority of kids who get sick, or even who have chronic illnesses overall, mm-hmm. they're not as disabled as sometimes we can be in the adult setting.
Yeah. So let's talk about what your day-to-day looks like. Like, what does your work look like? What does it mean to be a pediatric neurologist?
Yes. So for me, I do both inpatient and outpatient medicine. My structure is I have clinic during the week. So I have about 6 half day clinics a week. And then the other days I'm doing administrative stuff related to being a program director and things like that. And then every four to five weeks, I do 7 days straight of inpatient consults in one of our area hospitals. And we cover 2 hospitals in Atlanta.
And so you mentioned program director. What does that entail? And how did you come into that role?
That in of itself is a whole nother story. within medicine and within even your subspecialties, you can keep specializing for as long as you want. This is one thing that you realize. You think you're done when you match into your specialty. No, then you can do fellowship. And then in your fellowship, you can also find another specialty. And so as I was going through neurology, I found a real interest in headache patients. And I was intrigued for a couple of reasons. One, I was intrigued just by the science behind some of the primary headache disorders. I was intrigued by the population of patients. They were preteen to adult-ish, up to the age of 18. They're a very interesting patient population. I also felt like they get pushed to the side a little bit. Like no one else wanted to deal with them because they're difficult. But for some reason that drew me to them instead of pushing me away from them. So my residency director noticed my interest and she sent me to a program with the American Headache Society for resident education for those who might be interested in headache medicine. And so I went to this program, I got some good education there, met some mentors there, and it was, okay, I want to do headache medicine. And once I nailed that down at our hospital, we had a headache program, but our headache director left. And so we had a big hole there. And I feel like once my interest was stated and noted, I was kind of groomed internally for this role of creating a headache program before I even was done with residency. So I got really lucky in that way, too, as far as the timing of it being available to me right as soon as I was done with training, starting a program. So I started working on it before I graduated in my 5th year of I was interviewing people that would be a part of the program with me. I was still in my last year residency. So we have a psychologist who sees all of the headache patients with me. There's a nurse practitioner on our team as well and a program coordinator. And so we're a team of 4 right now. We're looking to hire more people to join the team. So it's very new. We started our first headache clinic December of 2019.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool. That's dope. Yeah. That's dope. So what is the most rewarding thing about the work that you do?
The most rewarding part is the interactions with the kids themselves. I love to see my kids come back and back to see me. Even sometimes when they're coming in and out of the hospital, which is really unfortunate, but you still form those relationships with them and even with their parents. A lot of people don't like parents. I love parents. Parents are great. Even the difficult parents, because when they're difficult, it's just that they want the best for their kid and they're fighting for their kid. And I totally get that. But as an intern, you have your own continuity clinics. And so you'll see kids straight out of the newborn nursery. And I was able to follow those kids up and through my whole residency. So from newborn till they're going to kindergarten.
Yeah.
That is probably one of the most rewarding things.
That is cool. That is cool. And so on the flip side, what is the most challenging thing?
The most challenging thing for me is being in the critical care unit as a neurologist. That usually involves a lot of tough conversations. You're having a lot of care conferences where you're asking parents to make impossible decisions about their kid's future when it's looking grim. Those are really tough days. And sometimes when you're on inpatient service, you'll have multiple conferences like that in a week. Doing things like a brain death exam on a child. That never gets easy. So those are the more challenging part, is dealing with the really critically ill mm-hmm. children.
Mm-hmm. So I want to ask, as many students are, we talked about this before, as many students are like in the midst of board exams or just in general, you know, medical school is tough. So mm-hmm. what advice, having gone through this process and from start to finish, well, not really a finish, but you know what I mean, from start to now, what advice would you give to a current medical student, resident, fellow, whomever, that is in the midst of a challenging season?
For sure. The first thing would be to find your support group. Mm-hmm. Even if it's just one person, somebody that you can open up to. Don't live in isolation. It's so easy to do, especially if you're an introvert. And I feel like a lot of people in medicine are introverts. So really force yourself to open up to people, trustworthy people. Don't go around to just anyone, because, you know.
But just in the street all over the place.
Right, exactly. Don't be out here on social media mm-hmm. and telling everybody everything, but, you know, with them, trusted people. If you don't have that, or even if you do, but you're going through just more of a struggle, you don't feel bad to reach out to a professional for help. Mm-hmm. Seeing a counselor, seeing a psychologist, seeing a psychiatrist, there's no shame in that. Mm-hmm. We probably don't do it enough or think about that enough, especially in the Black community. Mm-hmm. It's not something that, it's getting better now, but it's not traditionally something that is talked about a lot. But that can be important in difficult seasons.
Yeah. So you talked about support system. So who is, who's your support system? Has that changed over the last, you know, over this journey?
It has. Once I got in medical school, and like I said, I developed my own, you know, faith and relationship with God. I got plugged into a church mm-hmm. Pretty early on. And a lot of my faith and has been my support groups have been from my faith background. So church groups, people I've known from church have been my main, they've become like family to me. And in Atlanta, I've got plugged in again to an amazing church here. And I met so many people, and we've grown together over the last 5 years. Their kids are like my family. They call me aunt and uncle, and it's just amazing. To have found just so many people that have the same faith background. So when they're talking with them and asking them for advice, it's coming from the same worldview mm-hmm. That you have, which is important. But that's been it. That's been crucial. It's all come from my faith background. I have friends, of course, and things like that at work, but I do tend to keep work at work and home as much mm-hmm. as possible. That's my personal preference. I know everyone's a little bit different with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Gotcha. All right, so we're going to do some fun questions. Now, some of these might be rapid fire, but your answer doesn't have to be rapid fire, right? You can think about your answer. All right, so first question is, what are you really curious about?
Curious? I was talking about this with my husband yesterday. I don't understand what TikTok is. And I keep seeing the posts. I haven't been on the app. I haven't done it. I'm like, is it too late for me to learn new apps for social media? Because I just, I don't know. I think I'm done after Instagram. Mm-hmm. Just got back on Twitter mm-hmm. and Facebook. I think that's my limit for social media. Right? I'm very curious about this because it's all over the place.
Right. I think it's like, it's that thing that they used to have. There's another app where you like play a bit, like play music. This was several years ago. Like mm-hmm. you play music and you dance to it and record. It's basically like, I think you record you doing popular stuff.
Interesting.
I don't know. I've never used it. I've seen the videos, but I've never used TikTok either. So I don't really know. Like, I don't have the capacity for it right now.
I keep saying I'm too old, but right. I don't know.
Listen, I call Instagram the internet.
it's a news source. It's everything.
Right. It's everything. I can find out what's going on in like real news, popular culture, yep. ratchet news, like everything. Like yep. all of it. It's the internet. Instagram is the internet. You get motivation and you get some raggedy motivation.
You can tailor it to whatever you want. Right. Whatever you want it to be.
Right. Literally, Instagram is the internet. And I'm okay with calling it that.
Me too.
All right. So you are a new addition to a crayon box. What color would you be?
I would be rose gold.
Mm.
That's my new obsession.
Okay. All right. Yeah, any particular reason? You just love it right now.
I just love it.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Good deal. All right. So you're in your car, right? You're riding. You're by yourself. You listen to anything you want to listen to. You're singing. I don't know if you can sing or not, but you're singing.
And I can't.
Okay. All right. So you're singing, and in your mind, it sounds great, but you're singing, right? What are you singing to? Like, what is it? Singing, rap, whatever it is, what is it?
What am I saying? So the interesting thing about this question is I almost never listen to music in my car, unless I'm riding in the car with my husband.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm riding in the car, I'm always listening to podcasts.
Same.
I have almost an hour commute to and from work every day. Mm-hmm. So in the mornings, I'm listening to a podcast. In the evenings, I have a list that I go through of podcasts. And if it's not a podcast, I'm on Audible listening to a book.
That is literally me. I listen to books in the gym because it's like, mm-hmm. Right now, I may not be able to sit down and read a book for several hours. But mm-hmm. if I have an hour every day, I can listen to this book.
So many books a month that
exactly,
way.
Exactly. Yep. All right. So then what podcast are you listening to?
My favorite podcast of the moment, and it changes, but The Happy Hour with Jamie Ivey. She has a similar setup to you. So she interviews different women, faith-based leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And so through her podcast, I've actually found a whole bunch of other podcasts that I love. And the mm-hmm. other podcast I'm listening to is called The Bible Recap with Taylor Lee Cobble. Mm-hmm. And so you're going through the Bible chronologically in a year. So I started on January 1st and you read it. So I actually listen to the Bible on my way through the Bible app. I'll listen to it and then I'll turn on her podcast and she'll give like a 5 to 10 minute commentary on what you read.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been really interesting because there are so many things that you can easily miss in the really dry parts of the Bible, like mm-hmm. Leviticus and
lineage. They'd be like, and he begat, and I'm like, well, we didn't have to talk about
it. Yes. So I'll listen to it and I didn't think I got anything, but then I'll put on her podcast and she just pulls out these things that mm-hmm. I was not thinking about. And so those are my two favorite right now.
Gotcha. All right. Cool. So what is the funniest or the most ridiculous thing that has happened to you recently?
Interestingly, so I'm a new mom. I think you talked about this before. And I pump on the way to work in my car. So I have this, the car adapter that goes to an electric pump. And it's like I have a hands-free setup. And I'm all covered, so no one can see anything. But you can see all the contraptions coming out. And it looks crazy if you were to look into my car. So when if I'm in traffic, I try to pull up directly next to anyone so that they don't notice. But the other day,
I can just in my head, it's somebody driving next to you. Okay.
Exactly. Most of the time, it's fine because you know what? People are, I realize, always on their phone, which mm-hmm. is another conversation of itself. Too many people on their phone driving. But I pulled up next to this big rig truck and I was all covered.
You can see down into your car.
You can see down. So you can see all the tubes coming out and into the backpack I have in the seat. And it does look crazy. And I saw his face looking at the car and looking around trying to figure out what was going on. I couldn't move because we were in traffic. So I was just like, hey, yeah.
That is hilarious. So I need to add to the list of things you can do while you're driving because unfortunately, yeah. I do while I drive sometimes.
Oh, I do that too.
And my cousin, you know, you got that one cousin that teaches stuff you probably shouldn't know. My cousin taught me how to drive with my knees, right? Yep. So I drive with my knees. Right, exactly. And I eat. And I'm like, okay, so now I know that you can drive with your knees, you can eat, you can do your hair, but you can also pump while you're driving.
You can be very productive in these commutes.
You can pump, listen to a podcast, and drive to work. And eat. Like, this is
exactly.
Fascinating.
Only so much time in the day. You gotta make it count.
Oh, that's funny. That is hilarious. All right, so what's your favorite 90s sitcom, if you have one?
Oh, definitely The Fresh Prince.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Got it. All right. So last question. When it's all said and done, what do you want your legacy to be?
Yeah, I, you know, of course, this is a podcast talking about medicine, and that's a big part of who I am. Mm-hmm. I don't consider that, you know, the most important part of who I am. So my goal at the end of my life is to not have anything left over that was supposed to be used for someone else that God put me in this world to do. So I believe he has assigned certain things for me to do before I leave this earth. And I don't want to have left this earth without having completed every assignment that is tagged to my name. Yeah. And so that's my number one legacy that I want to leave before I leave this earth.
Yeah, that's good. That's so good. That's so good. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Porte.
No problem. Thanks for having me. Yeah,
I appreciate your time. Thank you for indulging my questions. And and tell folks stop looking at your car, okay?
I know.
Don't tell them to mind their business. Listen, in Atlanta traffic, so I'm from Savannah, right? In Atlanta traffic, my sister lives in Lawrenceville. Another brother lives in Sandy Springs.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, Atlanta traffic is good between the hours of, like, 4 a.m., and 4:09.
You're exactly right.
And then the rest of the people, they're like, oh, it's 4:08. Let me get on the highway. I'm like, y'all ain't, what the hell up?
It makes no sense. And of course, I decided I wanted to move out into the suburbs. So I did it to myself. But yes.
Listen.
It's just, that's why I need to listen to the Lord.
Because folks will stress you out.
It's stressful.
Listen. Every time I think, oh, I can move to Atlanta, I ride in. I'm coming up on 75. Say I'm coming from the south. Oh, this is great. I can do this traffic. I'm like, nope. Sorry.
It's over. Even on the weekend.
Every day, even early Sunday morning. Like, where y'all going?
Where? At church, I guess. Everybody's going to church.
Everybody needs to go to church over that weekend they had on the highway. They're like, I've been on the highway every day.
I feel a pit for all the people I told off in my head.
Listen. Oh, man. Thank you so very much. I appreciate you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.